Welcome to another Organization Unbound podcast. In this edition, we speak to Kiran Gulranjani, who problematizes the whole notion of practicing what you preach. Kiran is the founder of CoEvolve, an initiative based in Pune, India, that helps to nurture spaces of co-learning in organizations and communities. Kiran, a couple of years ago, you wrote a really interesting reflection that challenged the popular mantra of walking the talk and suggested that we might be better off dancing the talk. Can you describe what you meant by that?
Sure. What I really mean by dancing our talk is compared to walking our talk, which has a certain moralistic tone, dance has an element of play and a willingness to make mistakes and learn from them. There's a certain lightness that is present, which acknowledges our humanity and doesn't keep standing on top like a school teacher, which therefore creates a spaciousness for us to bring our gifts to the world and therefore more easily be in integrity, which is what walking our talk is about.
So how do you see this applying to organizations that are seeking to more fully embody their larger social visions?
When we are working with human beings, I think it's really important to meet them where they are. When we can get people, and especially leaders, to allow for mistakes, it creates a certain field of possibility, experimentation, and also performance, which comes from a place which is very different than from a moralistic, should do this and should not do this kind of place. I'm really reminded of Bucky Fuller, who, when he was asked how come he had got so many patents against his name as one of the most creative people, and he actually said that I have yet to meet somebody who has made as many mistakes as I have. So really, that's the spirit, yeah.
I can really relate to that moral space that organizations often get themselves into. And it reminded me of an organization called InterParis. They're a feminist organization based on very strong feminist principles, but they don't just look at those principles as ideologies. They really play with how to live them in practice. They also spoke about how their core feminist principles, by practicing them on a daily basis, have radiated out into their broader social change work in really powerful ways.
That's a very beautiful example, Anna. And I think the core that we are really addressing here is how any ideology, any belief gets crystallized and loses the vitality of the spirit. Mm-hmm. And then it just becomes cliched and mechanical.
Well, and one of the paradoxes that we've grappled with is that the organizations that have deep coherence between their internal practices and their larger social goals don't actually spend much time thinking about that coherence. Through the process of bringing their full humanness to their work, that expressive quality naturally emerges.
Exactly. And I think this is something which is so fundamental and so rarely seen in its totality. Really being authentic and vulnerable with the reality that we are in, this is something that we need to really bring more and more into organization. And I would like to share the example of working with a community which you are also aware of. Learning societies as a community has been born with the purpose of bringing gift culture into the world, like really moving from a whole transactional kind of relationship based on money to a spirit of gifting between human beings. And ironically, what recently happened in the whole community, that the very notion of gifting, in my view, became a religion. And there was a whole section of people who were insisting that a person actually operate from gifting and gift, you know, his time and energy. Is that the spirit of gifting when you start insisting that somebody gifts? When things become a religion and people are expected and almost instructed to walk the talk, you know, that's the time when we need to bring a little dance into our heart and see how life inherently is paradoxical.
It seems that the things that our organizations are created to work on are often the things that the organizations themselves really end up struggling with internally. The quote I love is that we end up teaching what we most need to learn. And the best coach is never the best player. Many of us in the profession of facilitating are given a difficult path in terms of walking the talk so that we may develop compassion and patience with others.
Completely. This article was actually born out of a very profound pain when I was often being confronted by my colleagues who seem to be able to learn more easily, walk their talk more easily. And I would find that when I'm in the situation of conducting my program, I'd be extremely in integrity, congruent, and living the talk. But often, as I would move out of that particular context, there would be sometimes a significant gap in what I would have said and demonstrated and lived. In my weaker moments, I would fall short of that. And that really brought to the table for me a learning that it's very important to share one's vulnerability, one's humanness, because while it is a greatness inside you that is sought by people and by organizations, it's really our humanity, our vulnerability, that enables them to see that, yes, we can also reach there because we are human, and let's walk together to that place of greatness.
Peter Block wrote in his book, Structure of Belonging, he said, your humanity is the vehicle for the delivery of your expertise.
Yeah, and I'm actually reminded of a beautiful book that I read called The Life You Were Born to Live. This line about we end up teaching what we most need to learn, and indeed we teach best what we most need to learn. So he says that actually it's like if you look at our purpose as a mountain that we are here to climb, like an adventure that we are here to embark on, then we begin to see, for example, if my purpose is to bring sensitivity to the world, I will sometimes be insensitive and sometimes hypersensitive, and through that going on both sides, I will actually discover the balance, which is appropriate sensitivity. And I'm reminded of that beautiful metaphor of the autopilot, you know, which is actually wrong 90% of the time, but because of the way it's designed, it kind of keeps adjusting, checking, and it ensures that the aircraft reaches the destination. The only thing we need to learn from the autopilot is that when it just simply observes and corrects itself, it doesn't blame either itself or another for having gone off track.
One of the things that's coming to mind is an experience that I had when I was teaching in a business school, and I was teaching a course on social and environmental issues. And as I was teaching the course, I was taking the material that I was teaching, and I was looking at how can I be better at applying it to my own life? You know, how can I reduce my environmental footprint? How can I, you know, just live in more of a harmonious way with the planet? But what I started to realize is the students in the class started to hold me up to a very, very high standard. And I remember at one point I was going on a skiing trip, and I was going with a large group of people, and the only rental vehicle that was available was a SUV. And, you know, SUV is the worst car you could drive. It's the opposite of a car that an environmentalist would drive. And I picked up this SUV because we were packing a bunch of people into it. So we were, you know, essentially carpooling. But when I was driving on campus to pick up the skis that we were renting, I remember sitting in front of the gym waiting. I think Warren had gone in to get the skis. And I was sitting there, and I was realizing as all these students were pouring out of the gym, oh, my goodness, if someone sees me driving this SUV, I will never hear the end of it. You know, no matter how hard I try to explain that this is why we rented the SUV. Yeah. We're actually carpooling.
One thing that I really learned from that is how might one actually be very conscious of the tendency that people have to put somebody on a pedestal. And this is where the whole thing around expertise and authority is something that humanity as a whole and organizations and individuals are now beginning to question. That is the wisdom resident inside the guru, or is the wisdom actually being born in a togetherness? The real teacher is life itself. And in the togetherness where the duality, the separation melts, only then there is a true learning that happens. So as we move into a new world which really looks at what does it mean to learn, what does it mean to evolve, most of us, if we are willing to see, are infants.
I totally agree with you, and I think it applies at an organizational level as well, in that we've moved from, in the beginnings, they were much more informal, but over the years they've become more and more professionalized to the point where we have many community organizations. How many of those community organizations actually contain community? Because we've become so expertise-driven, and so I think often what happens is that our organizations try to become these perfect models and become disconnected from the population they're working with, and they elevate themselves above that population rather than what you're talking about with this sort of co-evolving relationship. I worked with an organization a number of years ago that was going through a lot of difficulties, and this was an organization that provided support to community organizations. And I remember at the time when we were first going through these big roller coaster transition experiences, there was a sense that we needed to give the impression to the public and to our funders or to the organizations that we were working with that everything was fine, yet internally we were really suffering. And so at that time I had the sense that we can't give that impression, that's not reality. And if we do give that impression, then all those organizations that we work with have this impression that we're perfect, and we're not. And so then they are harder on themselves because they think they have to be that perfect because they think we are. I felt very strongly that we need to share the difficulties that we're going through and learn with organizations that we're working with, and that through the sharing of our vulnerabilities, it would become more of a learning environment. That it's not about, you know, being the change you seek, but it's about becoming the change you seek. And it's the becoming that we're never necessarily going to ever reach it, but the intention of always engaging with it and in a playful way, as you say, dancing with it, I think is really powerful.
Yeah. You know, I think any statement, you know, like be the change you want to see in the world, captures always a part of the truth. And the truth can best be captured only by a paradox, you know. And any kind of an attachment or a holding on to a certain moralistic standpoint is an indication that one is not in touch with the truth behind that.
I want to end with one last question. In your reflection, you give examples of practices. What could be some practices that would help an organization?
Yes. In fact, interesting that you asked me this question, because if you hadn't, that's what I would have liked to end with also. So most organizations are focused on task and results-related reviews. But if organizations can combine with that a reflection on the process and on bringing in the heart element, we make a safe space for people to either walk the talk or not walk the talk, and bring that into the structure and review of the organization. That is one. The second, is it possible to build a culture of co-coaching? Is it possible for leaders to recognize that their team members also bring a wisdom, and the real wisdom is in moving away from a very problem-solving orientation to creating something together? And the third is creating 10-minute vacation during the day, you know, just once or twice. Organizations need these empty breathing spaces for the new and for the now to come in. I think the industrial age has somehow divorced work from life, you know, and the heart from the mind. But I think we need to now create structures and processes that do not divide. Things like the 7-day weekend, you know, written by Ricardo Semler, and also Firms of Endearment, which is written by my friend Raj Sisodia, speaks of organizations who are seeing how can they bring a certain heart-oriented energy, which by its very nature of profound acceptance of what is, creates a certain vitality of dancing the talk rather than simply forcibly walking the talk.
Thank you so much, Karen, for sharing your thoughts, and I look forward to more conversations down the road.
Yeah, we will, certainly.
You've been listening to an Organization Unbound podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we invite you to visit us on the web at organizationunbound.org.